be worshipped. I want to be loved.
I've told you a million times not to talk to me when I'm doing my lashes.
Oh, it's you. I didn't know you with all your clothes on.
You never really understand a person until you consider things from his point of view.
What am I going to tell you? You look like a woman.
Well, girls, looks like it's back to the perfume counter for me. And by the way, there's a name for you ladies, but it isn't used in high society, outside of a kennel.
Well, hello, listeners. Welcome to the Goldwyn Girls podcast. This is Meredith and Amelia. This is just going to be a podcast where we talk about classic films. So this episode is just going to be some basic introductory stuff about ourselves so you can get to know who we are for the podcast and maybe decide if you want to continue listening to us or not. So I'm going to turn it over to Meredith. So we're just going to talk about who we are, what our specialty is, what our top four films are, and then how we got into classic films. So, Meredith, I'm going to let you take it away.
Okay, so as my co-host said, my name is Meredith, and I am basically a longtime fan of classic film, my specialty, if you will, in film. I basically spend a lot of my time watching old films, of course, and then researching and writing about them. That's just kind of been my favorite aspect of it. I love reading about especially the people behind the scenes, actors, directors, etc., what they were like in real life, getting kind of a candid glimpse of them. I write about my findings on my personal blog. And at this point, I'm trying to find a way to hopefully get into film history professionally. I've not found the way to do that yet, but I am on my journey to do that. Also, my four favorite films. So Meet Me in St. Louis, 1944. That is my all-time favorite film. It has been my favorite since I was a little kid. I don't know how many times I've watched it, but it's an insane amount. I know at some point we'll end up talking more about that, so I will move on from that. One of my other favorite films is Harold and Maude from 1971, which I've seen a good number of times as well. I was very fortunate to see that one for the first time on the big screen at my first TCM Film Festival in 2017. One of my other absolute favorite films is The Best Years of Our Lives from 1946. And then the other top four film is Clueless from 1995, a more modern classic. Basically, how I got into classic film was when I was a kid, probably 4 or 5 years old, I think, or so. My grandma was the biggest influence in that topic. She often showed me a lot of old musicals, like any of the Judy Garlands, like The Wizard of Oz, Meet Me in St. Louis, things like Singing in the Rain, Fiddler on the Roof, just a bunch of different ones like that, Oklahoma, Carousel. So that's how I got my especially lifelong love of old musicals. And I had a period of time in my childhood when I kind of thought that I grew out of watching old movies and was just like kind of over it, forgot about them. And then when I got into a film class in high school about 10 years ago, I ended up rediscovering the classics. And I think Singing in the Rain was my main segue back into enjoying film history. And from that point on, I have not looked back. So that, in a nutshell, is where I've come from on my classic film journey. And we'll definitely continue going on with that. And going to throw it back to you, Amelia, on what your story is and how you got here.
So before I talk about myself, I really do want to bring up, Meredith, your project that you're working on about Ruby Keeler, because I think it's a really great project. And I was just wondering if you could summarize it briefly on what you're trying to do and how people could get access to your project.
Yeah, thank you. So I'm really excited. I, during everything that's going on and staying home, I've been very fortunate to have time to work on some projects that I really want to do for, you know, sort of as a passion project. And I've wanted for a long time to do some heavy research on, you know, a classic film figure. And I had several different actors, actresses that I'd been considering. And Ruby Keeler kind of became the person who I narrowed my interest in. And there was a reason for that. But basically, recently I have doing some heavier research on her. Right now it's just looking at different newspaper archives and fan magazines. So it's very general at this point. But from what I've read and watched of her background, I've always been interested in her. And just reading and watching stuff on her, it's like really gotten me. I'm like, I'm sold at this point. I'm like, I love her. There's a lot to learn about her. As of right now, I'm just in the beginning stages of collecting research and information on her. So I don't have any kind of outlet that I've written about her yet. I'm trying to make it a bigger project. So at some point, I'm hoping to compile this into a book if I have enough information. And I will probably start adding some stuff on my blog more about her, but I'll try to include in the notes as well. A few years ago, I did write about her. I will, as time goes by, I'll definitely be sure to share more information about my research and like where listeners can read more about her.
Yeah, I think it's a really good project because I am assuming that most of the people who we know that are part of like kind of the TCM community are aware of who Ruby Keeler is. And I really think she's very underrated in terms of some of her other films that she's been in. So I think it's a really good project for you to be working on, and I'm excited to see what you're able to come up with. And I already saw some of the obviously magazine stills that you found, and that was already pretty exciting to see because there were some really good ones that you sent me.
Yes, I'm excited too. I'm excited to share it. And thank you for bringing that up too, because I'm like already really excited to talk about it.
I'm like, shameless plug for Meredith.
I appreciate that.
I gotta hype you up.
I tell you what, listeners, Amelia is amazing and I love her very much.
This is gonna turn into a love fest.
It's a love fest.
I guess I'll talk about myself.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm Amelia. I recently just graduated with a degree in film, a BA, because I'm bad at math. So I went back out. Math is evil.
Yes, it is.
Math has us looking stupid. So I was not going to have that. So I recently, when I graduated, I wrote a thesis called The Dangers of Streaming, The Death of Physical Media in the Home Archive. And I basically wrote about how streaming is something that we've never encountered before in the home market, and how it'll change kind of the way that we are able to view and collect films for ourselves, and why it's important that we think about that. And I'm a projectionist as well. I've been a projectionist for about 2 years now, almost 3 years. And sometimes I really like projecting film more than actually watching it. Can't tell you why, but it's very thrilling to project film. So I know how to project Super 8, 8mm, 35, and 16. I've yet to project 70, but that would be a really good goal someday in the future. And kind of already talked about what my specialty is. I'd like to think my specialty is projectionist, but I've wrote a few academic papers in my time at school, so I definitely enjoy doing that, but I enjoy touching film and looking at film as a physical art form more so than writing about film. And my top four favorite films, I cheated because I'm gonna count two films that are not classic films.
That's cool. Join the club.
They're classic to me, so and this is our podcast, so we can do whatever we want.
Yes.
So my first one is Sunrise, A Song of Two Humans. from 1927, directed by Murnau. I love this film. It's one of the most beautiful films I've ever seen in my whole life. I saw it in 35mm at Fifth Avenue Cinema before I worked there as a projectionist. And it was just like, oh, I think I cried in the theater.
That's beautiful.
One of those films that makes me cry. Because I'm a romantic at heart.
Yeah.
So I really cry during a lot of romantic films, especially classic films.
Mm-hmm.
The next film that I have on my list is Trust from 1990. It's directed by the independent filmmaker Hal Hartley. I watched this film because I was in a contemporary film class. Well, actually, it's film history, but we studied contemporary film in that film history class. And my professor played the opening scene from the film, and I was like, that looks like a cool film. So I watched it, and now it's like one of my favorite films that's very existential. I'm an existential person, so I really like it. And then French Can-Can from 1954, which is a Renoir film. I saw that on 35mm twice at the same theater. And I never really watch a film twice in a theater, but it's, again, this is like one of the most beautiful films I've ever seen, and a film that I've rated 5 stars twice, because it's just, I see no flaws in this film. And then my all-time favorite film is Secretary.
Yes.
From 2002. I was surprised I still left it on as my top four favorite film, like one of my top four favorite films, but I just really, there's Meredith and I could go on and on about this film, which we will at
when
some
point. We have, and we will more.
Yeah, you can't stop us.
No.
We'll continue to talk about Secretary.
Spaderfest, yes.
I know, right? Spaderfest. And then we'll do Crash, and then we'll do all the films. Is it Crash?
Yeah. It's Crash, yes, 1996. I think it's Cronenberg.
That's right.
Yeah, it's Cronenberg. I think it's Cronenberg. I'm going to hate myself if it's not, but.
Okay, going off topic slightly, which we do a lot, which we're going to try to do on this podcast, but I accidentally added a film that I thought was Cronenberg's Crash, but it's like a film from 2005 or something with Matt Damon.
Yeah.
Ew. I was like, that doesn't deserve to be on my watch list.
No.
But yeah, we love James Spader, and Maggie Gyllenhaal is so, her character is so endearing in this film, and I was so happy to project it on 35mm. I think that was like my peak.
That's gotta like, be so amazing.
There is nothing now. That was it. That
I can imagine.
So those are my top four favorite films. And then am I missing something else?
Did you, how you got into classic film?
Oh, that's right. Well, like, this is the hardest question to answer, because I feel like anybody who has to answer this question could just go on and on about it,
because
it's so much more complex than, I watched a classic film, and then I liked it, and then I kept watching classic films. Like, it's so much more, it's way deeper than that, but
yeah.
Essentially, I've been watching films since I was a child. I have a good fortune of having a grandfather who collects lobby cards for classic films, which were small cards that were placed in windows at theaters that contained stills from films to entice people to come into the theater to watch the film. And I just grew up watching all these classic films with him. And I used to go to the video store with him, and I would check out pretty much the same thing consistently. It would be either an Abbott and Costello film, a Universal Monster film, or some really weird BRKO film that I just happened to find on the shelf. And then, you know, as I kind of, you know, I just kind of liked them, but I wasn't really passionate about them. I'd say in high school, I rewatched A Night at the Opera with my grandpa, and I'd seen it before many, many times as a child, and I really liked it as a child, but there was something that changed when I watched it. All of a sudden, I just felt like it was so good and so great, and I didn't understand how I hadn't been watching it many, many times before. And I just kind of went on a, I almost said downward spiral. I guess you could define it as that. Just watching all these different classic films and just wanting to know so much more about them. And I think it's funny, Meredith, that you want to be a film historian, because I considered that in high school, becoming a film historian. That's my phone. We're going to have to figure that out. Anyway, I think it's funny that you brought up that you wanted to be a film historian, because that's what I thought about in high school. Mm-hmm. But then I realized I would have to write. And I was like, mm-hmm. I don't want that. So I'm glad that you're taking over on that, because I decided to drop out of that idea. But yeah, I just decided that I, you know, wanted to work with film somehow. Mm-hmm. And here I am. So that's the enthralling story about me.
And I am personally excited to be keeping up with your adventures and all of that, because they're always so interesting. I love it.
Yeah, I'm going to have to figure out how to, like, you know, it's illegal. Well, not illegal, but it's against fire code to have nitrate in your apartment, so.
Oh, yeah, I forgot about that.
Figure that out. So, sure. No one report me, please. Oh, I forgot to mention that I'm an assistant theater manager. Duh. That's a big, you know, I have a profession. I forgot. The next question I have is, what is your favorite decade of film, Meredith?
Okay, so it's sort of a tough question to answer for me a little bit. I tend to veer between the 1940s and the 1930s. I think it's kind of depending on what my mood is. For overall the purpose of giving you one answer, though, because, you know, me, I can't give you a simple, like, one-word answer. I'm going to say my ultimate decade by a hair is probably the 1940s. One of my favorite things sort of in the whole world is the 1940s, the Technicolor musicals, mm-hmm. of like MGM or like 20th Century Fox and all of that, like the lavish musicals. I also am very into World War II era films, especially those that involve the home front, like here, mm-hmm. you know, like in the U.S. Because I've seen the most movies I've seen on the home front are based in the U.S., I think that era, there's just so much to it, and I really can't go into it right now because I would like go on and on about it. But I think it's a lot of reasons that come back to musicals and the World War II era. I think it's just so interesting to see the culture, how it changes, and at the same time, a lot of the movies that did come out in that decade are very like syrupy sweet, especially when it comes to the musicals. And I know it can kind of come off as being schmaltzy and everything, but like for me, I just have always kind of been a sucker for like the happy-go-lucky, like let's fall in love musicals where we're, you know, like State Fair or something where you're off at a place where like nothing bad can happen to you and everything. And the world is bright and colorful. And I just like, those are sort of my comfort films. So yeah, so I'm going to say overall 1940s. I'm going to lock my answer there. What about you?
I feel like when I first got into classic films, I was really all about the musicals. And I would honestly, if it was high school Amelia, she would say the 1950s is my favorite decade or her favorite decade of film. But I think now I've actually gone like further and further down and earlier into like film, so I'm gonna have to say the 30s. Mm-hmm. My favorite decade. Obviously pre-code portion of the 30s is my favorite. So 34, I guess 1930 to 34 is probably like my favorite. I just love pre-code so much, and I think, you know, Meg Thee Stallion said it best when she said sassy, moody, nasty. I really think that's a good way to summarize pre-code films.
It is. I love that so much. I've not heard that, so I love that.
Classy, bougie, ratchet. Don't you think that describes the pre-code era very well?
It's so well, and they couldn't have ever worded it any better, so.
I really, you know, honestly, like, with my favorite film list that I just gave, like, it would show no indication that the 30s was my favorite decade, but
same. Yeah.
I have to say, though, that, like, when I want to watch a classic film, like, it's mostly from the 30s or even, like, silent era. Mm-hmm. So I really just love, it's such an experimental time, you know, because they're trying to figure out sound and sound on film. This is me being a tech nerd. it's like, doesn't even have to do with the actual content of the film itself. But yeah, I just like watching people trying to figure out how to like stage a film, you know, trying to figure out, okay, it's not like a stage play. How do we like, how can we move the camera? How can we, use sound effects? How can we, you know, there's just so many things that were trying to be worked through. And it's also the musical boom when musicals started becoming really popular, because then you had sound and also the Great Depression was happening at that time. So there's just like a lot of historical and cultural things that happened in that time that are reflected in the films that make them really, really interesting to me.
Yeah, yeah, that's a really good point that you brought up, like, with the technical side, because I feel like that's a really good reason for enjoying a certain, I mean, certain era, or anything for that matter. So, yeah, no, I just want to point out, like, I think that's a really good, valid reason for your enjoyment of it, because it's so interesting to look at certain things, like the technicality of movies and how everything was changing so rapidly. And, you know, just the idea that, you know, technology has always been around, and it's so interesting to look at how much it has changed in that, within that time period, and then looking at it from this perspective. It's so interesting, and I think it's very important too. So I think that's really cool that you're interested in that, and I'm very interested as well, but I think you know a lot more than I do, so I'm hoping to get more experience with that side of things.
I know a little bit about it, but I feel like I spent a lot of my time in high school reading my pre-code book instead of paying attention in class, and also reading Danny's blog, precode.com, because I read that so religiously. And so, you know, just kind of learned a thing or two about it, but I'm definitely not an expert, but it's just such a good decade to me. So thanks for appreciating my view.
Yes. And also, really quick side note, I remember like spending time in high school reading books, and I like, the main thing I can think of is like when I became obsessed with the Marx Brothers after my junior, it was like the summer before my
bring that up.
It's such a mood. Like the summer before my senior year, I discovered their films at the local library, and basically started checking out and like buying books about them. And I remember just like constantly reading them and talking to my friends about them. And I don't think they probably like really, they were just like, okay, whatever. I'm gonna guess. And I'm so sorry to everybody who I probably talked way too much to about them, but I don't know. I just, when you said that too, I was like, oh, I remember that feeling. I missed that a little bit.
I'm gonna ask the question because I just want to hear you say the answer.
Okay.
But who is the cutest Marx brother?
Yeah. Oh, you know who I'm gonna say.
I just want to hear you say those words.
I'm gonna make a case for Chico Marx.
It's kind of enduring that's your favorite, like, that is your favorite, and you think he's the cutest.
It's so weird, because, like, it's, I don't even know, like, the moments that I find him really attractive, it's very odd and specific, but, like, when he plays the piano, every time there's something very, there's something about him that he just, like, it's like he knows he's working the piano, and he gets this look to him. There's like a little like wink in his eye, twinkle in his eye, whatever you want to say. And I don't know, there's just, it's interesting. And I think maybe it's been with you, and it was on my own time as well, but I have spent, I don't know how many, not hours, I'm gonna say minutes, analyzing the scene in Horse Feathers when he is playing the piano with Thelma Todd, and the interaction and body language between them, and like trying to figure out if they had a thing going on in real life.
Because I remember you talking to me about this. Like, I remember you analyzing this. I was there for it.
Yeah, so like this is the thing, like, I'm certain you've probably had certain instances, like, not exactly like that, but you know, like this is like what we do, like we're movie, like old movie nerds, like we'll go back and watch clips endlessly, like maybe trying to analyze something, or I don't know, something similar to that. So it's like, I really appreciate having somebody like you that completely understands like the reason behind doing it and not thinking that you're just absolutely bonkers.
I have like some things to add on to Chico.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. 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 What do you think? And like, who do you think is like the most attractive Marx brother?
Okay. One, Chico, like bitches love pianos. Okay. Second of all, they smashed.
Okay. Okay.
That's my verdict on the Thelma Todd and Chico situation. Okay. I think there was definitely, they definitely bing bonged. We are not cutting this out of the podcast.
No, we're not.
The people must know the truth.
You heard it here, not first, folks, but
we're solidifying it.
We are, exactly.
And third, do you know who my favorite is? I don't know if I ever really told you, but I feel like this at the same time. Actually, I think our phases were at different times, because I think when you were really into Chico and the Marx Brothers, I think at that point I'm like, been there, done that, sweetie.
I'm going to say Harpo.
Oh, that's such a good guess. wrong.
I like how nice you are that there's only, well, there's technically, oh, wait, no, it's Zeppo.
Yeah, it's Zeppo.
It's like a multiple choice answer because there's only like four, you know. You were very nice to me about missing, you know, like 25% shot there, but
I literally sound like a teacher, like, that's really good, but
keep studying, sweetie. Zeppo, oh my gosh, I missed the obvious answer. I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, it's just so embarrassing to say out loud, but because he doesn't, like, people always complain that he's like the least funny one in the films, and like he's the straight man, and he doesn't have like a lot of scenes or dialogue, or he doesn't have the best dialogue. But like, there is in Horse Feathers, I think, because they all sing, right? That's the scene with Thelma Todd where Chico's singing and playing the piano, right?
Yes. Uh-huh.
Yeah. So there's that musical number where they're all singing different lines of the song.
Everyone says I love you. Uh-huh.
Yeah, so and good. Zeppo sings it. Mm-hmm. And I was like, woo, panties dropping for Zeppo.
He has a good voice. It's not that bad.
He does. And I honestly, as a kid, like when you said Harpo, I was like, yeah, like as a kid, I really liked Harpo, which makes sense because he's the most kind of like cartoonish of all of them, in my opinion. Or he's the most kind of like, he just looks like he would, sounds so weird to say a lot. He looks like he would like kids.
It's true.
It looks like kids would like him. Let me rephrase that. Anyway, a no, really badly worded phrase, but yeah. So I also just, I feel like I find myself like in a classic film sense, I find myself drawn to the straight man or like this more serious actor or character. Mm-hmm. I don't know why. Like I've never really been I've never really been into comics. You know, like Dean Martin, Jerry Lewis, obviously Dean Martin's my favorite. So I don't know. I just find that is a theme about, that's like a theme in my life. So maybe I should talk to my therapist about that and see what she has to say about that. But I think that's a good segue into our next kind of question, which is, you're very excited for this one, Meredith. yes. We're going to name our top five handsome hunks of classic Hollywood.
Oh my goodness. Okay.
Meredith.
I'm starting. Okay. All right. Thank you. So, it's sort of ever changing. But I'm going to go basically with, if we're talking like strictly Hollywood, So I'm going to basically put down my five as number one, Christopher Plummer. And we're talking like The Sound of Music, Captain Von Trapp. Amazing. Like Drop Dead. So good. So Christopher Plummer. So we've talked about the next one, like extensively, I'd say, us, me and you. But so Richard Dreyfuss, circa 1970s, The Goodbye Girl, that kind of era. It's weird, but I'm very open about it.
I just want you to know, Meredith, that this is a kink shame free zone. So we will not be kink shaming anyone's choices. So viewers, listeners, I do not want people writing in complaining about our choices. Like, this is like a sex positive podcast.
I love that. I've already gotten crap for liking him, so I'm just like, stop. But and thank you too. I'm with you wholeheartedly on that sentiment. So let's see. So okay, Richard Dreyfuss. Okay, so next one. I've got Gene Kelly on the list because it's a classic. It's a classic answer, but holy cow, so hot, so talented. Those eyes, that smile, the dimples, everything. Yes, everything.
Boy got a big booty.
Oh yeah, because he's got that. There's like some Tumblr out there dedicated to it, and it cracks me up.
Oh, remember this is like. What is it? No one's gonna really like find this as funny as we do, of course. But typical. Ann Miller eBay posting where it's that picture of her talking. It's like a still of her talking at a party, and it says Ann Miller gossiping about someone's big ass. She's gossiping about Gene Kelly and his big ass.
That's exactly it. Yeah, and I was gonna say, just like a teeny bit of background on that, I think it was like not that long ago, I was just looking around on eBay because, again, as old, you know, anybody who is into anything passionately like us classic film folk, at least for some of us, we like to spend a little bit of time on eBay, you know, looking around for like memorabilia and random like rare photos of people. And like in my case, I usually like I can't afford anything and rarely do get anything, but we can dream. So I happened to just look up Ann Miller and want to see if I can find anything cool, like any like autographs. Again, a girl can dream. And yeah, I like happened to stumble upon this article, and I saw the name of it, and I pretty sure I thought of you like right off the bat. I was like, I have to share this with you. You're going to appreciate it so much. And I don't know. I would love to know like the reason behind the person, like, you know, were they just like, I'm going to grab a random title that's just going to evoke, or what's the word I'm looking for? Like, just going to bring this person, like somebody's going to buy it. They're just going to buy it off this title. I'm not going to lie. It's enticing to me. Like, they got me on that one, but I didn't buy it, alas. So
yeah, it's still on eBay. If anyone, you know, we'll put a link on our social media pages in case anyone wants to buy that still. And maybe you could take a microscope and figure out who's big ass Ann Miller.
Gene Kelly is the theory right now. We'll have to see if that holds or not.
Oh, is that your last one?
Oh, I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry. I had a thing come up. I have like, it was loud. I was like, oh no. So I'm so sorry.
No.
Okay. So my final two, I have Mr. Rock Hudson, who, need I explain, he's gorgeous. I feel like he's kind of like Gene Kelly tier, where he's that classic, good looking, dark hair, tall. I don't know if Gene Kelly was tall. Maybe I don't know if he was actually. I was like, man, I'm blanking on that for a second. He doesn't give me the tall guy vibes, but maybe he was.
He was short and angry and had a big booty.
Exactly. But Rock Hudson's got the whole thing, like the tall, dark, handsome, beautiful smile. A lot of it, the reason why I have like sort of those like mushy, gushy feelings about him is just like the fact that he's so romantic and. A lot of his movies, and the two that come to mind are the Douglas Sirk classics, All That Heaven Allow, and Magnificent Obsession, like how romantic he is with Jane Wyman gets me every time, and I fall and I'm a puddle. So Rock Hudson has a very rightful place in my my Hollywood hunks list. And then also I could not go through this list and forget the beautiful Louis Jourdan, who, although he was a French actor, did appear in a ton of Hollywood films. And I've always had a thing for him. Again, it was kind of his, not only his looks, but just how romantic he was on screen. And I know Gigi it's a movie that a lot of people are like uncomfortable with. And I don't particularly love it. I like some of the musical numbers in it. But I find that he is so, like, there's something that's so charming and romantic about him in that one and a couple other movies that it's just like, again, I'm a puddle, I'm a mess. So those are my top five old Hollywood hunks. And at some point, I have a couple other people I wanted to mention, but they're technically not Hollywood, so I'm going to leave that for another time. With that being said, Miss Amelia, who are your top five old Hollywood hunks?
Okay, so number one out of all of them is Mickey Rooney. No, I'm just kidding.
I'm sorry.
I caught Meredith so off guard with that one.
You did. I should have known it was coming. You said it earlier. I thought you meant it as a joke. I love it so much.
That is not true. If anyone is interested, please look up Mickey Rooney's sizzle reel on YouTube, because it's probably the best thing you'll ever watch, and it's just, I don't even want to give it away, it's just too good.
So good.
So, no, Roonster is not on my top five, unfortunately. I think he looks like a carrot, so. So, my actual number one, I feel like this is kind of cheating, but my number one hunk is Dean Martin because, duh, I have his name tattooed on my body.
Mm-hmm.
I don't really...
I knew after you did that. Inside joke time. We'll bring it up in good time.
This is all just going to be us doing inside jokes and people being like, ugh, they're so annoying. I don't really like Dean Martin's films very much. I know he had some really good roles, but I guess I just have him on here because technically he is a classic film star and I do like some of his films, but like I just kind of love the man as a whole. Love that man. And then next on my list is Fred Astaire.
Oh.
Which I love that you chose Gene Kelly and I chose Fred Astaire because
someone
can do it.
The parallels. I love that.
Yeah. I think I like him more maybe because he's in my favorite decade of film.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he made films, you know, for many decades, but I really like his films from the 30s the most. I am so disheartened that I read that he had a toupee.
I know. I forgot about that. I know. It's okay, though. I'm trying to think of who I have a crush on that had a toupee. I kind of had a thing for, like, Charles Boyer, and he had a toupee, so don't feel bad.
Am I just, like, I guess my toupee radar is broken, because I didn't even realize that he had a toupee until I read about it.
Your toupee radar? I'm sorry. I felt like
I was lied to.
Oh, my gosh.
No, it's kind of like that meme where guys say, you know, take your date into, like, if you have, like, a date... Make her go into the pool with you because then all her makeup will come off.
Yes.
And you'll see how she really looks. I'm like, that's how I feel about Fred Astaire.
Toupee snatched.
This is what happens when you thirst after old Hollywood stars because, you know, they're all wearing toupees. It's hard out here, guys. It's hard being us. So I wonder if... So my next person is Frederick March. I hope he didn't wear a toupee.
Oh, that's a good pick. Ooh, he's like under the radar for me. So good.
I'm talking like Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. Frederick March, because he is, I swear to God, when I first watched that film, everyone was talking about how technically amazing that film was, and in my head was like, Frederick March is so hot! Frederick March is so hot!
Yes!
That's what I was thinking the whole film.
A Star is Born, like, that, because I actually haven't seen that one. The one you mentioned, I'm completely blanking. But, A Star is Born, I have seen, and I was gonna say, he's beautiful in Technicolor, like, at that, around that, sort of the age he was, like, oh, so good.
Technicolor Zaddy. Love him. We'll have to talk about that film at some point, because Meredith and I have a lot of feelings about that film.
Amen, sister.
And, next one is David Niven, which, like, again, I don't want any hate. Okay. He's really, when I talk about David Niven, I talk about, like, Bachelor Mother David Niven, so that's, like, what, 1939? So we're talking, like, 30s. Again, we're talking 30s David Niven.
That's
cute. This one's a hot take, I feel like, because a lot of people find him annoying.
Mm-hmm.
Dick Powell, I just like his voice, and I was totally in love with him in high school, and I watched all the Gold Digger films in high school, and I honestly fell asleep watching Gold Diggers 1935 every night, because I just, like, loved that film. I just like his voice. I like crooners, okay? I obviously like crooners because I have a crooner's name tattooed on me.
Crooners are bust. Honestly, I love it. I love it.
I think it was either Gold Diggers or Footlight Parade in theaters on 35 with Gary. That's my mentor for everyone who doesn't know. But who would know that? Nobody. Only Meredith. For everyone who doesn't know, I said that so, like... everyone's following my every move. Dick Pat, like, when we were watching the film in theaters, Gary was like, oh, his voice is so shrill. And I was like, don't be mean. He's so romantic.
I feel attacked right now.
Remember in have you seen Dames isn't it that Ruby Keeler and Dick Powell are, like, their characters are, like, cousins in the film?
Oh, yeah, because they're... I think there's a scene. Are they, like, okay, I'm visualizing it. It might be wrong because it's been years since I've seen it. Aren't they, like, lounging by, like, the lake or something?
Yes.
And they're, like, talking about how, like, oh, like, we're cousins, but we're in love or something like that. I don't know. Is that what it is? Because I think that's what it is.
But I can't remember if they're first cousins or, like, second cousins, but I'm just, like, we'll need to talk about that at some point because I'm just saying. That's a little bit much, okay?
Yeah.
I know it was the pre-code the pre-code era, but calm down, please.
Doing everything right now to try to push the envelope.
They said, you are going to watch incest and you are going to like it.
Exactly. They're trying to make that, like, the new fad or something, the new it thing.
In 1934, incest was all the rage. Just ask Warner Brothers.
That's the thing. We're also going to make that a conspiracy theory if something like that.
Yeah, if anyone ever wants to hear our really weird conspiracy theories about classic Hollywood, I'm sure we'll have a lot to talk about on the podcast.
Oh, we will. We will.
So that's kind of all the introductory stuff that we have. We all love Joel McRae's hands.
Yes.
I'm surprised neither of us wrote Joel McRae.
I know. I don't know. It's one of those weird things where, like, I think he's really, really attractive, but, like, I'm just like, oh, there's so many people at the top. He's an honorable mention. Let's put it that way.
Okay. Honorable mention, Joel McRae and his hands. Anyway, so for our next podcast, Meredith and I are going to talk about The Goodbye Girl. Of course, you know, this is going to be really great for Meredith because she's in love with Richard Dreyfuss.
Yes.
We hope that you'll tune in. Thank you for listening. Is there anything else you'd like to say, Meredith?
Yeah, really quick, just to add on to what you said about finding us on social media. We are on Facebook. You can look us up at The Goldwyn. That's GOLDYN, The Goldwyn Girls Podcast. And we are also on Twitter as The Goldwyn Girls Podcast as well. Thank you so much for listening. I'm excited about doing this. I promise that every time we will have very lively conversations, because this is kind of like what we do in real life anyway. So we figured let's go ahead and do this. Let's record this and share this with people, because we want to spread the fun and the love. So thank you so much.
Yeah. And we hope to have everyone here listening next week, and we'll see you all soon. Goodbye. Bye.